Unfiltered, the official Sunderland AFC podcast.
Welcome everyone to SAFC Unfiltered. Myself and Danny are back once again at the Academy of Light, and it's a hive of activity at the end of a transfer window. So we're keeping ourselves to ourselves in our special room, and we're going to have a legend on the program today. Not a first team player, but a former first team player and a former teammate of yours in the form of Julio Arca. Danny, looking forward to chatting to Julio.
Yeah, a great lad, Julio. You know, I've spent a couple of seasons with him here. Obviously, I've seen him a few times as well since around the place. And obviously, recently he was at South Shields, wasn't he, managing them? But no, fantastic player. I think in the times back, it's a few years now, but what a player he was. Lovely left foot on him. One of those players, you give him a ball in a phone box with three defenders around him and he'd come out of there with it. So, And I know he's well thought of by the Sunderland fans, and no, he was a fantastic player for the club.
Yeah, we're getting him on, of course, ahead of the game against Middlesbrough at the weekend. A fixture which all the North East football fans enjoy. You know, it's one of those. It's got a little bit of extra spice about it as well. And of course, Julio had some successful times there as well.
He did, yeah, after leaving ourselves, yeah, and joining Middlesbrough. He was there for a few seasons as well, wasn't he? I know, listen, he had one or two injuries throughout his career, but when he was fit and he was playing, he was a fantastic player. And I remember he scored a great free kick actually down at the Riverside for us. I think it was a victory for us that day, 2-0 it might have been. But lovely left peg, as I mentioned there. And it'd be interesting to see his thoughts on the game. I'm sure he'll probably sit on the fence with this one.
Yeah, definitely.
Foot in both camps, isn't it? So he'll probably opt for the draw on that one. So let's see what he's got to say.
Hey, what did you make of the win against Stoke at the weekend, Danny? Back to winning ways, a home win for Michael Beale. That's going to mean a lot, isn't it, for everyone?
Yeah, I think especially after the disappointment against Hull, you know, where we had a lot of the ball, didn't we? A lot of possession, but didn't really do enough with it in the final third. But at the weekend, yeah, you know, three different goal scorers. Mason Burstow getting off the mark as well. Abdullah Bar, you know, contributing and having a good run out. So there's a lot of positives to come from it. Listen, Stoke had chances as well. On another day, they could have put one or two away and it's a different outcome, but they never. We took our chances, 3 points on the board, you know, up to seventh again, and we're in a good place.
Okay, then let's go off and let Julio in the academy. And people might wonder if anyone's outside thinking we've re-signed him, but we definitely haven't. We have re-signed him for SAFC Unfiltered. Let's go meet him. Welcome to SAFC Unfiltered, Julio Arca. Julio, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Very well. Used to play together here, right, Danny?
We did indeed, yeah. Going back a fair few years now.
Yeah, a few years, yeah. And we did play together for a few years, yeah.
Yeah. We've got you on for a couple of reasons, Julio. One of the reasons is because you're a living legend around the Northeast, and you know, we've been trying to get former players on throughout the podcast series, so it's good that we can get you on as that. But also because we got a big game at the weekend, a big game of Northeast football, and that is Middlesbrough versus Sunderland down at the Riverside. Of course, didn't go to Sunderland's plan in the last game with a 4-0 defeat, of course, as well. But with a foot in both camps, you're the perfect guest, Julio. So I hope you're all right with that.
I think as well, Frankie, we need to wish the man a happy birthday. It's
yes.
His birthday.
Happy birthday,
thank
Julio.
You, thank you. 1 year younger.
1 year younger. Yeah. Are you doing anything to celebrate it later today?
I might just have a little meal with the family tonight.
Nice, nice. Yeah. Why not? Are you still based in the Northeast at the moment?
Still around here, yeah. Still in Sunderland. So been here for a while. I went away for a few years and then came back, and we're looking to stay here. Mm-hmm. Hopefully for some time now.
Yeah, are you looking to get back into football at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, it was a good experience, the one in South Shields, just to see or just test to see what it's like to be a manager. Mm-hmm. It's a different job, you know. It's demanding. It requires you a lot of time. But it's always something that I want you to try. Mm-hmm. I'm still in the process of finishing my A license, so I'm not looking for anything now, so we'll see what come up, see if something come up. Mm-hmm. And if you know, I'm sure I'll do something else.
Yeah, so tell us about the differences being a manager to a player then. You said you just mentioned some of the different demands. Are you a kind of manager who had to be the first one in, last one out, or were you quite modern in your approach to managing? Were you taking on advice from managers in your past and things like that? And do you look at people like Pep and modern managers for inspiration?
Yeah, I mean, as a manager, you have to approach any team with your own style, don't you? Every manager has their own style. Some managers like to play, you know, from the back. Some managers like to play long, more aggressive. With the players, I think you have to update your system, you know, be more modern. Because if you're trying to be like some managers used to be when we were playing, it doesn't work out now. You need to have a conversation with the player. You need to understand, you know, you need to know what's happening with their notions on the football side, outside the football side, if you need any help. And I think the more you speak with them and the more you get to know them, the more they can perform to you, you know, when you get that relationship. Obviously, with a limit, you know, that's why you have your assistant coach as well. You know, he's the one that they get to know the players better, and then it's you after that. But yeah, I was trying to obviously make players comfortable, make players understand that the opportunity they have to be a footballer now is unique, because it only happened once, and if you don't take that seriously, then in a few years' time you can be doing something else and then you regret. Because I saw many cases of my football career, great players not taking things seriously, and then time went past, and I should have done this, I should have done that, and it's no way back. So especially to young players, I was trying to pass that message, you know, that they need to do things right and hopefully make a living of football. That's the main thing, that's the aim that, you know, that you're looking at.
It's a dream, really, isn't
well,
it?
Well, it is, and if you can do it, regardless what level you do, and if you can make a living of football, you know, do something that you like and get paid to do that, is, you know, it doesn't happen too often. So yes, and on top of that, obviously, we would tell players to work hard, you know, be professional and do the right things regardless the level we would play. And I was Division 6, we still do the right things, you know, every day. So it was a good experience, you know. You got the pros, the cons, you get to know things that managers do that, they get to know, or you get to speak with all the managers, and, you know, they can tell you do this, do that, but then when you get to, you know, meetings or you speak with the players, everything changes, you know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you learning with time, you get more experience with time like any other job, and then obviously you'll decide, do I want to do again? Do I go back? Or might do something else, you know.
Yeah, Danny, you've just finished your A license, haven't you?
I have, yeah.
And so that, you know, this is something you maybe want to move towards a coaching career now, but it must be hard to adapt, because being a player, you have quite a luxurious kind of life, especially being Premier League players. You turn up for training, go to the games, you know, but managerial jobs, it's, as Julio was saying, it's different demands.
Yeah. No,
it's something you're interested in.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah, you see the other side of it, don't you, really, from, as you say, the coaches, managers getting in earlier, getting everything set up. As a player, you come in, like the lads are probably in there now, having their breakfast, getting nice and relaxed, getting the omelettes, whatever, off the chefs.
Yeah.
Get the boots on, trot out onto the training pitch, but it's all the prep work and everything that goes on behind the scenes, isn't it? With the numbers that need sorting out, who's taking which part of the session. Obviously with yourself, I know you had another former black cat there, Tommy Miller, was with you, wasn't he, Tommy? Whether you allow Tommy to take a lot of the session, you're watching the session from around the pitches, how much input you want to take in terms of that as well. And then, you know, ultimately it comes down to what happens at the 90 minutes on the weekend, doesn't it, as well? It's all the hard prep work which goes on during the week. And then it all boils down to that 90 minutes on a Saturday afternoon.
And there's a lot about the team around you, because especially in a club the size of Sunderland, you've got whole stats guys, whole departments,
just
analysing stats and things like that. That's the way the game's going, though, right?
Yes. Obviously, depending on what level you're coaching. Going back to the level we were before, we used to do everything. So you have to do your own analysis. You have to present the video to the players yourself. You have to do the coaching sessions yourself and obviously your assistant coach. So everything has to be done by you, you know. And then, like Danny say, you get early in the morning, you prepare, you probably prepare the session, you know, the day before, and then you make some difference or touches regarding the players that are available, because some players will go 10 o'clock in the morning and say, oh, I'm not training today. So your session changes. And then in 20 minutes, you have to make, you know, changes. And then after training, you stay there, you watch games of the team you're going to play against, and then you go home, and then night time he probably watch a bit more, so it's in, you know, that it can be a long day. Yeah. And then obviously you have to be a father as well, yeah, and a husband.
Yes, and also, you know, as a modern manager as well, you've got to deal with the fans on social media, yeah, and the media itself.
Yes.
Is that, yeah, is that quite a hard commitment as well? The media, I know obviously the level South Shields were at, but I imagine as you work your way through the leagues, that's a big role in itself, just taking, yeah, care of the media.
I think the higher you go in the leagues, the more help you have. Yeah. So for example, you know, here the lads need to do video analysis and then get to send to someone and they will show the video. And manager might be there, yeah, he probably doesn't have to be there. Yeah. And then, you know, social media, everything is prepared for the manager, so he doesn't like have to worry about, you know, things. But yeah, it's a lot to take on. Like Danny say, you know, as a player, you should turn up, train, and then you go home.
Done by 1 o'clock, 1:30 at a,
yeah,
push.
Yeah, 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 yeah. As a manager, it's a demanding job. And that's why, like, you need to try and you need to test, see what it's like. And then, obviously, you know if you want to do it again or not, because, you know, it's good. I mean, it's the closest to be a footballer.
Yes.
That's the thing. That's the thing. When you retire, that's the closest you're going to have to be a footballer again, because you're in touchline.
You're in the dressing
room. You're feeling
room,
the, yeah, you're feeling the, you know, everything there. You see the game so close. The adrenaline when you win is great. But then when you win, you only last less than 24 hours, because you win on Saturday. On Sunday, you're already preparing the session for Monday, yeah, where the players win on Saturday, mm-hmm, and they get to enjoy that full week of, we won. So yeah, it's just, it's a totally different thing, but you know, if you don't do it, you don't know what it's like.
Yeah, and you've played under some pretty famous managers as well at Sunderland and Middlesbrough as well. And which managers stand out for you as managers who really made an impression on your career?
Well, I mean, when I first came here, I was Peter Reid. I could not have a proper conversation with him because obviously the language restriction, but I could feel how passionate he was, and to be honest, how a big character he was in the changing room. And he didn't have to like speak with the players all the time, but when he did speak, you know, you could tell the players was taking everything on board. And then I have managers like Mick McCarthy, that he was good. Obviously, Danny played under him as well. He was really good.
And the England manager,
yeah,
as well.
Tony Mowbray and Gareth Southgate, yeah, you know, all different managers, different personalities, but you know, them managers, I got on really well with them, and bits that you can take from them on the football side, on the personality side, you know, good managers.
Yeah, Danny, you must have played for some good managers in your time. So what kind of attributes does a good manager have to have?
Yeah, I think you say probably 20, 25 managers in my career. And as you say there, Mick, I'd put Mick certainly in the top three.
Why? What was it about Mick?
Man management, really. I, yeah, think he had the good blend of, he could mix with the lads. He'd like a laugh and a joke with the boys around the training ground, wouldn't, yeah, he? When it was obviously time to go out on the training pitch and work for that hour and a half, 2 hours, however, yeah, long you're out there, he wanted things doing right. Honesty from him. He'd pull the lads in to have a chat if he was leaving them out the side or making the changes. And he could get stuck into the lads at half time if he needed to as well, couldn't he? So he had a good blend in there, I think, Mick, and he was a good man. Management was perhaps his standout.
Yeah, yeah, he's someone that you could see he was black or white in a way. You know, he won't lie to you, like it or not.
Yeah,
will go straight, and I think players respect that.
Yeah,
you know, I think when you say if you're a manager and, you know, few of the players are not going to be in your plans, and as soon as you get there, you tell them, look, nothing against you, it's not personally, but at the moment we got X amount of players that probably be in front of you. And I think the players, obviously, they won't like it, but, you know, going past few days, they're going to say, oh, that's fair, you know, he was honest enough to tell me. And I think the players respect that, and he was one of them, you,
yeah,
know, like it or no, he will tell you, you know, what was going on. And I have a little issue with Mick, because we have Howard Wilkinson before he came.
Yeah,
I wasn't playing much on the Howard, and then Mick arrived and I wanted to leave the club because I wasn't playing. I played, I think, only 4 or 5 games the season before. So I said to Mick, well, I'm leaving, you know, it's no point. And then we have, you know, a few conversations, and then he basically won me back, and I stay here, and I've seen that I play more or less 40 games that season, and we done well. So yes, you could tell straight away that his personality and how straightforward he was.
Yeah, a good manager.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Julio, just taking it back there, and obviously how the move to Sunderland came about in the first place. Was right that Peter Reid was watching you playing for Argentina's under 20s against England at Craven Cottage.
Yeah.
And you must have done okay.
Yeah. We done okay that game. We drew 1-1. Thinking about that game, it was a lot English famous players. I mean, Frank Lampard, Joe Cole. It was many of them there that, you know, when you watch again, oh, he was there.
Yeah.
You know, you could...
What about in the Argentinian squad?
Argentina was players that, I think it was Colocini. Wow. He was in Newcastle. It was another guy called Andres D'Alessandro. He was famous over there. He played for Portsmouth on the Harry Redknapp for, I think, one season. And then we have all the other couple of players that they play in big teams in Europe. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that was the starting, apparently. Peter Reid was there, or someone else from the club was there.
Right.
And then they followed me for, I think, 6-10 months. And then they make an offer.
How does it work? Because we're in the transfer window right now. Yeah. And I was going to ask your opinion on this, because what was it like? You get an approach from an English club, Sunderland. Had you heard of Sunderland?
No, not really.
Yeah, and then... How fast is the process, and what do you do? Do you tell your parents and say, look, I've got an offer from an English club, can I go? And then you follow it through. You land in Newcastle, I guess, and then you can't speak English. I mean, what happens? Have you got a translator? Just give us an example as a pro, because we know we've had a lot of foreign players come to Sunderland over the last couple of years. Some of them couldn't speak English, so it must be very hard.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, we're going back 24 years ago, so things change now. I think the majority of the clubs get a lot of support to the players on the languages barrier, on, you know, supporting the family, the kids, schools, houses. When 24 years ago, you more or less have to do everything on your own, or you have one or two people trying to help you out. So when the offer arrived, I remember it was during the summer in UK, so it wasn't like January, where it's a closed window. Mm. So the offer arrived, and more or less I have a week to think about it, because that's what the agent said to me. Look, they're looking for a player, blah blah blah, and then we need to make a decision in a week. On my mind, I would say, well, I go. I have no doubts about going, because I always want to come to Europe. Ideally, I want to go to Spain, because Spain at that time, it was probably one of the best leagues in Europe. And obviously the language and the culture will help me to adapt a lot quicker. But Sunderland, I have a look about Sunderland, where they were the season before. They've done really well. They have some good players, international players. So I made my mind up. And then obviously, my dad, being a footballer before, he said to me, yeah, we support you. Obviously, for my mom, it was a bit harder, losing your kid, 18-year-old, to go to a different country. But she understood as well. So it took about, I would say, 4 or 5 weeks. You know, I say yes, I came here for about a week or less. They showed me everything around, you know, the clue. And then I was waiting for my European passport, my Italian passport to, like, be done. And then I have to go back home. And then I think it was the 4 or 5 weeks I came back. And then that was me here officially.
And can you remember when you first went in the dressing room at around sort of 2000, wasn't it? So there'd be some big characters in there at the time, you know, the Mickey Greys and... you know, Peter Reid and, you know, people like that, you know. So what was it like, and did they make you feel at home?
Yeah, obviously, as a young player, you go there nervous, you know. I was playing in the first team in Argentina, but never really play in front of so many people like I did in my first game, you know, 48,000 screaming and shouting. So it was like, it was a big impact in a good way. And then sharing a changing room with players like, like you mentioned, Mickey Gray, it was Stefan Schwarz, Alex Ray, all youngish players, but really experienced players that play. I mean, Stefan Schwarz playing some of the best teams in Europe, you know. And then you have many other players that they were playing for the national teams as well. So yeah, no, they made me feel welcome. Obviously, the language barrier was a little issue there. But then I have Emerson Tom that he could speak Spanish. Stefan Schwell could speak Spanish as well a little bit. So they were trying to help me out, you know. And the football language, when you get in the field, you know what it's like.
Yeah, it's easy.
When you're there, it's easy. The problem is when you're out the field.
Yes.
Yeah. So do you think that is a poor excuse then, a language barrier thing in some cases for getting ideas across to players? You hear managers generally in football say, you know, there's a language barrier there.
Yeah.
Football, you know, it's an international language, right, Julian?
Yeah, it is. Yes. I mean, you only need a ball, football ball.
Yeah, exactly.
And then you can show everything to a player without speaking much.
Mm-hmm.
And to be honest, I didn't have that problem because I have a couple of lads that could translate for me. You know, so they translate. I think what the manager wanted to obviously translate. You know, sometimes Peter Reid was getting too angry, so they had to avoid that. You know,
yeah.
But no, he was even Peter Reid. He was trying Adrian Heath, that he was his assistant manager, yeah. And Bobby Saxton. Adrian Heath is playing Spain a little bit, so he was trying to speak Spanish a little bit on his, you know, on his, you know, the way he could, even with a dictionary in front sometimes. That's going back 24 years ago, yeah. You know. So we didn't have this mobile phone where you can speak and translate. It was a dictionary, Julio. Yeah, you need to do this. You have to show me the word in there. But it was good.
Although touched on in the technical area with his dictionary.
Yeah, it was, even the secretary, I remember, used to be a lady called Tracy when we used to train in Charlie Hurley. Mm-hmm. And she was the only secretary in the club. Yeah, she used to do everything there. And every time I used to go and see her, open the door, she opened the dictionary and start like exchanging words. And that's how it worked before. She helped me out to like find an apartment. Obviously, I didn't have any kids because I was only 18. But she was really helpful and she could not speak a word in Spanish. But somehow we could communicate to each other.
Yeah, that's nice, isn't it, Danny? It's nice to hear stories like that. And you've obviously been in dressing rooms where foreign players have came in. You do your best.
Yeah, you have to. Yeah, obviously you can see that whether they're shy, nervous coming into the environment as well, but obviously the language barrier. And it's difficult for them, as you say, but you're right there. And I've heard it mentioned, obviously, look at the squad we've got now with, obviously, Nazrai Rusin, Ukrainian, perhaps doesn't speak a lot of English. We've spoke to Dodzy, haven't we, and trying to get a few points across. But as Julio says, you've got the tactics board, you've got clips, everything you can show them, maybe what type of runs you want them to make, whether to drop in, whether to play on the shoulder, all that stuff can come from the meeting rooms, can't it? And the tactics side of things, if the language barrier is there as well. But obviously last season when I bumped into you in the car park, Jefferson Bennett, he's just gone out on loan, hasn't he? But you were obviously
helping him out,
weren't you?
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I saw that.
Yeah, just about getting a few words of English and now he's got to go and learn some Greek.
No, Shearson is a great lad. Obviously young player with a lot of potential. I saw him training and saw him playing a few games. And I understand, obviously, as a young player, you want to play. And, you know, I believe the club is supporting him. You know, the club clarified that he's only going there temporary and they want him back in the summer.
Get some game time, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's good. It's good that the club is doing that because you give the player what he wants, that is game time. Hopefully he can perform. And then when he comes back, he might create a good problem for the manager because if he's doing really well, then the manager is going to have to have a look. And if he not, then, you know, the club and himself are going to have to work something out again.
Do you think that's a good move, though, Julio? Obviously going to another country rather than maybe perhaps staying here looking at a League One loan where he's in the British environment, really?
Yeah.
Or how do you see that one?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know much about the Greek league, but for what I know, it's different than the English leagues.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think it's as pacey, as aggressive as the leagues are here. The main thing is for him to go and play.
Game time,
if you're
going
to go abroad, move abroad to, again, different place, different languages, and you're not playing, then you don't do any favour to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess he must go there because he know that he's going to get the game time that he wants.
Go on.
I was going to bring it back to Julio and just ask about some of what was his best memories playing for Sunderland over the years? Can you remember any particular goals or games which stand out for you?
Well, my first season was good here. I was lucky to score my debut. So obviously that helped a lot on the confidence
side. And you very quickly became a fan favourite as well, Julio.
Yeah,
that must have felt nice, did it?
Yeah, it felt great, to be honest. Can't complain about that. and especially when I was just starting, you know, get that support from the fans. Because, you know, if you start on the wrong foot, then your confidence can just drop very quick. Luckily, I started well. I was lucky to get in the team straight away, not in my position, but as a left wing, and I scored the goal, and then the next few games I played and the performance were good, the team was doing well as well, so that helped as well, because that season we finished 7th, like the season before, so it was a good season overall for me and for the team and for the fans. And then through the seasons in here I have ups and downs. But, you know, winning, obviously, the championship when we won with Mick McCarthy, that was something that as a player you're obviously looking to do. So I was good.
Would that be your favourite season at the club? I'm just looking, obviously, at the stats. Yeah. 42 games that season as well. Because I know you had one or two injuries, didn't you? Stop start at times in your career. But that season, 9 goals and 42 appearances.
Yeah, so. Yeah. On the Mick, I think I played the most of the games.
Yeah.
I think the first season, I can't remember if it was... Definitely above 35 games, and then the second season I play more. So yeah, as a player, when you're active, you know, you feel fit, you feel stronger, mentally you're feeling better than when you're playing, you know, 4, 5, 10 games a season. You know, it's just, you get a bit depressed in a way, you know.
Yeah, I bet. And Danny, you had some questions about Julio's positioning at his time.
No, you mentioned it there, that you're playing left wing. I know, obviously, you played a lot of games at left back as well. I think Middlesbrough, you went and played at centre midfield as well, didn't you? Favourite position, really?
I know. Left back.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always... I could play in different positions, but left back is a position that I felt I could play till I was 40 years old. Yeah. You know, it's a position that I knew that well since young age. It's good to have everything in front of you and you could go forward when you want. So,
but it's such a crucial position now in the modern game, isn't it? The wing backs, if you like.
Yeah, because now managers, you know, change in system. Normally, when I was playing, it was a 4-4-2 here in UK.
Yeah.
In Argentina, it was a 4-4 diamond with a number 10 and then two on front. So it wasn't many systems, where now is so many systems that you know, managers ask fullbacks to go really, really high. You become a striker more or less on the attacking side. So, but that position, I like it. Yeah. I came here, obviously, Mickey Gray was playing, he was the captain, so they pushed me up in front of him.
In front of Mickey,
and then I ended up having more or less my career as a left wing in Sunderland. Then he left, I play a little bit of left back on the Mick, and then George. McCartney start playing left back, so we more or less make a good partnership in there. And then when I went to Middlesbrough, I signed as a left back because Frank Quadruc, that he was a French lad, he left. And then done all the pre-season, first game, broke my toe. So I was out for 2 months. And I think Andrew Taylor, young player, went to play left back. And then we were short of midfields. And that's how I ended up playing.
Going in there,
centre midfield. Right. It's not an easy position to play. You know, it's a hard position. Quite demanding on the physical side. Yeah. Demanding on the awareness. You know, as a left back, as I say, you only look in this way and that way.
Yeah.
As centre a midfield, you know, it's just everywhere. You know, it is hard.
So you got a bit of sympathy for Dan Neil, Pierre Ekwan, Job at the moment then for some
reason. Yeah. Well, as a midfield, you know, people don't realise you need to know. I mean, as a player, before you receive the ball, you need to know what you're going to do. But as a midfield, it's even quicker. You need to think quicker than other players around the field because, you know, you lose the ball in the centre midfield, you can't create a chance for the other team to more or less go against your defence. So it's a hard position, enjoyable because you get to touch the ball all the time, more or less. Mm. But it's physical, demanding. You have to defend, you have to get in the other box, you start to score. So, to be a complete midfield, it's hard.
I was going to say, obviously, when you went going to Middlesbrough, I think you were Gareth Southgate's first signing as a manager there, weren't you? How did you find him? I know he's obviously early in terms of his managerial career,
Yeah.
How did you find Gareth? Obviously, the England fans that'll be listening.
No. I found him. It was only his start in Korea as a manager, so he have a lot of people like helping him out, and it wasn't easy for him because he went from being a player to be a manager. So from one season to the other. Yeah. So imagine like managing the players you play with. It's not easy.
Yeah.
You know, I remember he used to travel from. I think they used to live in Harrogate, some of them. So he used to travel together, you know, four or five of them.
Yeah.
And then he could not travel with them anymore.
Because,
you know.
A bit awkward, isn't it?
I think you know. So I guess it wasn't easy for him to, like, saying, you know, or leaving the partnership he had when he was playing out of the team if he have to. So it's some hard decisions for him. But, So he did really, really well. And as a person, he was like, again, very honest, nice, well communicated with the lads. He always had time for the players. He was a player before, so he knew what the players want, you know?
Yeah.
And can you see why he's been a success at England? Because of his attributes?
Yeah, definitely. And I was glad to see him doing so well. I know expectations in here in England are always high. And if you reach a semi-final, it's not good enough. If you get in the final and you get beat, it's not good enough.
But he's got us as close as anyone.
Exactly.
Since we won.
That's what I mean. When you look at the full picture, has anyone done what he done? No. So, you know, obviously unlucky to lose some key games, even the last World Cup. You know, they have a great chance. But that's football, you know, it happens. But I saw he did really well, bringing young players as well to the national team.
Something stuck by that, isn't it?
Changing the style of always rely on the experienced players.
Yes.
It always was, you know, we rely on Gerrard, on Lampard, on here and there. Yeah. Where he said, no, let's give the chance to young players. Mm-hmm. And young players, come, you know, they did perform for him. Mm-hmm. And they brought something else to the national team. Pace, energy. Goals. So, no, what he's done is good. I know he's saying that we probably be leaving after, you know, the Euros, and then he might be looking to get into the Premier League or a Premier League team. So, but yeah, he's a great coach, I think, and he's a very good person as well.
Yeah, goes a long way, doesn't it?
It does indeed, yeah. And obviously somebody else recently departed from Sunderland, Tony Mowbray, somebody else you worked with at Middlesbrough. Tony's character. Similar to Mick McCarthy, would you say, or where would you put Tony?
Yeah, Tony, I would say, probably Mick I don't know what Mick is now, but he could lose his temper a little bit more.
Yeah,
you know,
Tony, not so much
Tony,
no,
not really. Tony is calm, you know.
Good cop, bad cop. Tony's the good cop, yeah.
Well, yeah, put it that way, yeah, maybe. But Tony was good. I mean, he always have the same style of football. You know, when I was in Middlesbrough with him, he tried to play the same style. Here, obviously, he worked really, really, really well. It's a style that I don't see many fans saw before in Sunderland Football Club. You know, normally Sunderland have that style of, you know, being more direct, being more aggressive, trying to get in the other box as quick as you can. Where Tony changed the style of, you know, building up, trusting, you know, between players. And, you know, I believe in that system. I enjoy watching that system, especially when it works. And I did enjoy many games Sunderland play under Tony.
Yeah, let's talk about Sunderland then. What have you made of them this season? Obviously, we just mentioned in Tony, who's no longer at the club. We got Michael Beale now, and the club are expecting the team to kick on under Michael Beale. Good win last time out for Sunderland, and I guess that wins breed wins, and it's all about getting back to that momentum, isn't it? Because that's such an important thing in football, isn't it?
Well, going back to expectations, you know, if you look at last season, I seen Sunderland went above expectations, and that's why fans are going to be disappointed now. But, I mean, Sunderland coming from League One to nearly go promoted, that was a massive task for the manager, for everyone. So, obviously, when you put yourself so high up, then the season after is like, well, we can't be any lower than that.
Yeah.
We have to go high again. And the championship this season, having a look at the teams that are playing in that league, is really, really hard.
Tough.
It's a tough league.
Yeah,
if you put... it probably is one of the hardest leagues to play in Europe, I will say. You know, when you compare with, like, you know, Turkey and Greece and Scotland and, you know, other leagues around here, it's a hard league, hard teams, so it's not an easy league to get out of. But obviously, on the fans' point of view, they want to see the team getting promotion. Obviously, with a new manager, new managers need time, and it's a process. You can't just change things like that straight away in a matter of weeks. Managers need time. I understand that, you know, results obviously keep people happy or not, but, you know, it's a process.
Yeah, looking at the league as well, you touched upon it. The teams above us at the moment, Coventry, West Brom, Leeds, Southampton, Ipswich, Leicester.
Yeah.
They're all really strong sides, aren't they?
Yeah, and if you look down as well, it's many. Middlesbrough is down there.
Yeah, they're only 3 points behind us, but they're down in
3 points behind with a game in hand. Yeah. So obviously, for them, it's a massive game, as big as the game is for Sunderland on Sunday. But one win, I think from Coventry till position 13, it's only 4 or 6 points. Mm-hmm. So a couple of wins can get you in the playoff, and then you out and you in, and it's all season like that. It never changed, apart from probably the top two, they might go a bit further up. But it's a competitive league, and it was always been competitive. When we were there, it was competitive, you know, never changed.
Yeah. No, it's a difficult one, as you say, and then you look at those teams and the expectation levels from the fans. A lot of those teams have been in the Premier League, haven't they? And obviously the teams that have come down last season, they're right up there amongst it. You know, you're looking at Leicester, they'll go back up, and then there's three or four perhaps nailed on at least for playoffs.
Yeah.
Ipswich have had a great season, like us last season, coming back up. They've kicked on again. Everybody's waiting for them to drop off, but they're still right amongst it. Pressure on them from Southampton. But yeah, from our point of view, we're in seventh. We had a good win at the weekend. Big one coming up against our localist rivals. The old Derby shout, I know, comes out, doesn't it? But yeah, and we owe them one, don't we, after that 4-0 defeat at the Stadium of Light earlier in the season as
well. Yeah, that was an odd one, though, because we were in good form at the time. Dan Neil gets sent off
just before half-time,
and the game changed, didn't it?
I thought Sunderland was more or less in control of the first half. Yeah. They were playing well, they were creating chances. They probably should have gone ahead.
Yeah.
And then you lose a man right, you know, at half time.
It was such a weird sending off as well. Was, Jared Gillett, the referee, because of something Dan said to him. I mean, that must happen in every game, right, guys?
Yeah, of course it does, yeah.
But that's changed now, and it's a bit like, you know, I'm not enjoying that part much of not having the chance to speak with the referee. Only one person can go there. If you put your hands up, you get booked. If you do this, you get booked. First tackle, you get booked. It's just everything's just changing so much. Where before, you could feel the game just flow a little bit more. You know, just, I'm not saying, you know, letting people get kick each other, but just like let the game go a little bit more. Now it's just too many scenes. The game is stop and go all the time. Obviously, we have that bar system as well. So yeah, it's a bit hard to be a footballer. And sometimes you have to be careful. Should I go for the tackle? Should I know?
Mm.
Because, you know, that's the way it is at the moment. Yeah. You know, you could get yellow card for nothing sometimes. Where before, you know, you could see some tackles, you could be people, you know, fighting, and it's just different now.
Yeah, what about Middlesbrough under Michael Carrick?
Yeah.
Starting to click a bit.
Yeah.
Unfortunate in the cup, maybe, but he sticks to his philosophy, doesn't he, Michael Carrick? He likes to play a certain way.
Yeah.
And he stuck to it at Chelsea, didn't he?
Well, obviously, he paid the consequences against Chelsea, but because you're playing against a bad team quicker, faster thinking. So to do what he likes to do, it's probably harder to do against bad teams. But look, I respect him that he stick with his philosophy, and that's the way I'm going to play, and I'm not going to change it regardless. Up to now, he's done well in the league. They're not far away from the playoff with a game in hand, as I say. Yes, they seem to like win a game, and then lose two, and then win three, and then lose or draw. So they haven't got that consistency of getting 4, 5, 6 games without getting beat.
Which is pretty much where Sunderland are at the moment as well.
So it's hard to find that consistency in their league, but they're still there.
They've got a couple of injuries recently as well. Yeah. Jones is out injured, I think, for the weekend, which is good for Sunderland, but bad for them. Because he's a great player, isn't he?
I mean, they still got a big squad. They got a massive squad. But I'm sure they're going to have someone to obviously replace him, and hopefully we see an entertaining game on Sunday.
Yeah, what are you anticipating, Danny, on Sunday?
Yeah, quite a fiery game. Got to go back to back if we can, haven't we? Get on a run, as you mentioned there. It's not trying to win two, lose one. You know, getting on a little consistent run where you're going 5-6 games unbeaten, whether it's 3-4 wins and a couple of draws. Keep the momentum going, as you say. There's 4 or 5 teams pretty much sorted, I think, in those playoffs, you know, with Leeds and the ones above. And then from West Brom down, it's still all up for grabs and still a lot of football to be played. And if you're one of those teams that can go on a good run now, you know, like we did back in the day, didn't we? When you get on that run there and you kick on, momentum's with you, and you go on and can we be one of those teams to take that 6th or 7th place? Yeah. Not 7th place, 6th or 5th place.
And another full week on the training ground for Michael Beale as well, with possible incomings as well.
Yes.
You know, a lot can change in a couple of days.
Yeah, well, I obviously assign a left back now.
Yelda,
And they probably sign a few other players. I think Sunday game will be a tactically game. You know, two teams playing the same style, more or less. Who's going to press better, obviously, when they're playing from the back? Who's gonna put an aggressive pressure to win the back, or are you gonna sit back and you let them play? So it's gonna be tactics here and there, and I think the ones that get the tactics right or spot on, they're probably gonna have more chances to win the game, I believe.
A word on a left-sided player at Sunderland AFC at the moment, Jack Clark. He's having a great season. What do you make of Jack as a player?
Yeah, Jack has been consistent. He's one of the key players in the team. Sometimes the team rely too much on him, but look, he's someone that can take that pressure. And you know, when you give time and space, he creates a lot of troubles to other teams. Obviously, teams start to get to know him, and they probably, instead of putting one on him, they put like double marker. Mm-hmm. So if you go past him, I have another one like Newcastle did.
Yeah,
because you know, teams have the luxury of watching games and watching clips and, you know, studying the teams that you're playing against. So, but look, he's a young player with a lot of energy. He can score goals, you know, from any position. And yeah, he's been a key, and he seemed to be, he seemed to have this confidence high enough to, like, you know, score at any game.
Yeah. Okay, were you going to mention something there?
Any more positions we need to strengthen in the next, what is it, 24 hours? It runs till tomorrow, doesn't it?
It's the window, until, I think 11 o'clock tomorrow, the first. Yeah. So where do you think something need to strengthen then, would you say?
Well, I mean, looking at then, again, it's just regardless, it's just, depending on what system the manager is looking to play, you know, or what he got in mind. For what I see the last few games, I didn't see many runs in behind, especially in the front. So we seem to like play from the back, and it's good. Then you pass the first, the first defensive line from the other team, and then when you get into the midfield, we seem to like looking to have the ball on the feet
playing,
all the time.
Play in front of the team.
So sometimes when you start mix it up, like, I'm not saying launch the ball and wish for the best, but I'm just saying start playing balls in behind where strikers can be effective, then you may team sit back a little bit because they don't want to have that big gap between defence, back four and keeper. And that's when you have more time to play from the back. But if you start doing all the time the same, then you attract pressure all the time, don't you?
Yeah, of course.
So that's, I think, something that I noticed, that if you have that mix of being aggressive on runs in behind, could make the team a lot stronger.
Yeah, and do you think Sunderland already have that player then, Danny?
It's something I've mentioned on comms, isn't it, a few times. I think we're a good footballing team. Often I think we play too much football in front of the opposition where the opposition's defence is happy, everything's happening in front of them. I think we actually tried it a little bit more at the weekend against Stoke in the first 20 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Runs were there, maybe it didn't come off, but you could see they were looking to do that. But yeah, as you say, I think that's what we need to look for a little bit more. Well, obviously, Mason Burstow got his first goal, so he'll grow in a little bit of confidence from that because it's obviously been a long time coming for him, and he's been in and out of the team as well. The other young lads as well, the other young strikers on the bench waiting for their opportunities have got to take them along when they come as well. But yeah, something I think we can look to do a little bit more. But me and Julio aren't in the coach's setup, are we?
Not yet. The class of Mick McCarthy in the dugout too. Well, Michael Proctor's there at the moment, so who knows what
that. Everything looks easy from outside, but obviously something that you notice, I notice, and you know, I spoke with people that they notice that.
Yeah, okay then. A final question then, Julio. Prediction for the weekend. Well, you're going to say a draw, aren't you? Because yeah, you don't want to annoy Middlesbrough fans.
He's going 1-1 all the time.
1-1 well, would be a terrible result for his side.
It's one of them games where, like, as I say, going back to what I said before, tactics, you know, if two teams sit back and let them play and just monitoring what they're doing, it could be a probably 0-0, you know. So it depends how aggressive the teams will be. You know, I know the two teams are looking for a win because they need to, like, keep themselves close to the playoff. I know Sunderland are a bit higher than Middlesbrough. Well, I have to say a draw.
Good answer, Julio. Thanks so much for coming on SAFC Unfiltered, and we'll see you again soon.
No cheers, problem. Julio. Thanks very much.
Julio Arca speaking to us here on SAFC Unfiltered. Lovely chap. We've spoken to him a couple of times on the preview program on the stream, haven't we? He's been pitch side with us a couple of times, and obviously you know him from your time in the dressing room with him at Sunderland. Lovely guy, and you know he's still got a passion for football, and it'd be good to see him return to the game, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you can see it there. Obviously, his chat not just from his playing days, but his early days in managing, and you know his experiences with South Shields there. I think, you know, has he got a future in the game? Chatting to him there, the way he's thinking about football, I think he's looking at, you know, his mindset now. He wants to go into it and try and make a go of it in his managerial career. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes. Still a young man, obviously 43-year-old today, like myself. So a long time ahead of us, yeah. But no, I think, you know, he knows the game well, playing it a lot of years, hasn't he? And he's got good experience both on and off the pitch. So, yeah, no, I wish him well moving forward with his coaching managerial career.
Yeah, big game at the weekend for Sunderland, for Middlesbrough as well, really. Yeah. Both, like, you know, footballing sides. Win for a good game.
Yeah, I think so. And first up, you look at, you know, we mentioned it there on the pod with Middlesbrough coming up to the stadium like earlier in the season and picking up 3 points in the manner of it as well, really, wasn't it? With, you know, we mentioned Dan Neil getting sent off just before the break, but we sort of collapsed really in that second half. Maybe tried to take them on as we did in the first half, where we were probably the better side, tried to carry on playing our open, expansive football, and we got picked off. With us being a man short, really. So, you know, the boys would have learned from that. And you always ask me, don't you, as well, when you've had a defeat against the side and then you're playing them in that second game of the season, is it still in the back burner, so to speak? And it is in the memory. And, you know, the lads, Dan Neil and the other boys, will, I'm sure, mention it in the change rooms before they go out the weekend. Listen, we owe these one. You know, localist rivals, really, you know. We said there, is it a derby? Isn't that
it's a big game.
Debate always goes on. It's a big game. And, you know, they're sat just behind us in the league. You know, the first thing you're concentrating on is going down there and can we come away with the 3 points, or certainly a points worst case. And we're more than capable. You know, they've had a mixed season themselves. They had a slow start. They picked up well under Michael Carrick. They've had a decent cup run. A bit of a hiding down at Stamford Bridge, didn't they, in the second leg? How will they react from that? And, you know, coming up against ourselves. But as you say there, will it be a case of both sides going toe-to-toe? You know, we like to try and press high and get off the sides. I think they do as well. Or will we be a little bit more cautious, sit off them a little bit more, allow them to have some of the ball and try and pick them off on the counter-attack? We'll have to wait and see.
We will wait and see. Remember to subscribe to SAFC Unfiltered on all your favourite podcasting platforms, and we'll be back very soon, I'm sure.